Interrobang.
On today's episode of Interrobang, I'm joined by a new friend of the channel, actually, Ryan. Ryan runs an Etsy shop, hobby shop, where he sells basically similar products as I used to produce and sell through my Casco Electronics business. So if you know me through Casco Electronics or you know about Casco Electronics, if you're interested in electronics, chip music, hobbyist stuff like that, nerd stuff, this is a really great episode. Ryan and I had a great conversation. So without further ado, here's Ryan. Welcome back to Interrobang. Today I am joined by my good buddy Ryan, who is doing a lot of interesting, similar things with the chiptune hardware and just kind of other stuff. I think probably similar kind of life positions with family and other, you know, work, professional career trajectory kind of stuff. So I'm really excited to be joined today. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. As we spoke about before, this is an absolute pleasure for me. And I hope I can get all of the questions I want to ask out, because this is quite sudden. Didn't realize we were going to be able to do this literally less than 24 hours after I had emailed you.
Yeah, man. Well, and like I said,
all your other podcasts, I was, you know, even more excited to actually talk to you and, you know, just kind of figure out like what had happened with you and the whole cat school thing, because I'm kind of doing the same thing now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's lots of things we can probably relate to.
Yeah. I was just looking at your Etsy shop and your stuff is way cooler than mine, just from like an aesthetic perspective. And this is so cool. Yeah. You've got such... Because I'm looking at it now. So you got Arduino boys, obviously. We have common ground on that. You got an MT32 emulator. That looks freaking cool. You got a YM2143-3 chip. Wow. So is that like a MIDI synth then?
Yeah, it's a MIDI synth that will use all 9 voices available.
That's sick. Because I had that, but it was just the one voice. So this is, wow. That's cool. Where are you getting the chips from these days? Like, are you having problems with that? Because I was having problems with that, and that was a couple years ago. I hear that there's like ST32 or STM32 clones that are decent, but I was just kind of curious about that.
It's a little bit hit and miss. They come from China.
Yeah.
The way that I can find that they're original is if, like, you can tell by the printing, like, they'll have an actual date code.
Yeah.
They'll look like they've been just like tore up. You know, they just look melted. Like the face is all corroded, and you'll see that there's still like some solder residue on the legs. So that's how I kind of know that I've actually got a few that had similar look to ones that are real, but actually aren't.
Yeah.
And I'll find that they actually do kind of sound different too, but they work, which is like really strange to me. Like what actually is this then? Because I know they're not making these, right? So like, what is this chip?
Some random clone that they like rebadged or whatever. I don't know.
Right,
but I got a
clone
burnt.
That was made back in the day, right? They wouldn't have.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pulled from some. Yeah, it's like a compatible clone, but who knows exactly what it is? Have you ever messed around? Because what was like the most common clone? It was like, well, technically, isn't the YM2143 clone of another chip?
The AY chip, yeah. And I don't remember the exact serial number of that one.
But have you ever messed with that one at all? Is there a drop-in replacement?
It's supposed to be a drop-in replacement. Some of the pins on the YM are disabled, so it doesn't have a full functionality. There was some like serial communication it could do with some of the devices that the A1 used that doesn't really affect like really what the YM can do. It's just like extra features, I guess. Yeah. I never got a chance to actually play with one of those because they're just super hard to get.
Oh, are they?
And a lot of times like those will be rebadged as YM chips.
Oh, maybe that's what it was, because when I had my YM2143 synth, I eventually offered the AY as like an option, you know, like just whichever chip you wanted. And maybe that's what it was, because I got like super burnt one time. Like I ordered like, I swear it was from like a seller I'd used before, and I ordered like 20 or 50 chips, you know, and they came in and they're just like way suspiciously too clean. Like they're like, they looked perfect, you know, and it's like, you kind of want, I don't know, if they do have some solder on the legs, you can kind of like, maybe it actually works, but they were all just totally fake, like just didn't do anything. So that sucked. But anyways, that's interesting.
That's just the risk you take, right? Yeah, especially when you're ordering something from China. And you're like, should I order 5 or should I order 50?
Yeah. You know, well, you order 5 and then it's like they come in and then you order 50 and it's like, oh, frick. Like they, I got, yeah, they're shipping for, what do they call that? Whale fishing, right? It's like, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still just try to order like only
a couple at a time.
Well, no, I don't order it. Yeah. Oh. Well, because this one has 3. So, I mean, I could order a couple of times, but I'd only be able to build one and then wait, which would, you know, that's not feasible. So I kind of just have to cross my fingers and hope that, you know, what I saw in the picture is going to, because again, like what you see in the picture and what actually arrives a lot of times when it comes from China, a lot of these components, like, you're like, oh, wait a minute. That's not what I asked for. Yep. It's not what I was expecting. And then you have to order it again. And
cool. So then you all, it looks like you also do a lot of Game Boy carts and it looks like you're using 3D printed shells, or maybe it looks like you have an option, standard black or transparent crystal. And then what are you using for the flashcards themselves?
So there's PCBs you can get on AliExpress, which are just, they're perfect dark carts. It's the only ones I've found that have battery in it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been like become popular just because they have a battery in it and can hold most ROMs and it's easily flashable. Like it's auto detected. So there isn't a lot of problems like flashing anything to it. And especially for like these homebrew games, not so much of some of the chiptune games like use it to save presets, but a lot of like the homebrew Game Boy games will have some kind of safe functionality. So it's good just to have one that kind of does it all, and they're not expensive. So.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. That's really cool. So yeah, what question? Like yeah, what do you want to know?
I kind of want to know, you know, just like starting from the beginning, like. Oh. How did you personally get into it? How did it become, you know, like a business idea? And then like what happened after that?
I've been waiting to tell this story, dude. So thank you for asking and showing up and letting me tell it. So I was born in 1991. My brother was born in, he's a couple years older than me. So I think he had already had a Game Boy. So I think I've like basically had a Game Boy in my hands. Well, what year did it come out? It came out in 89, right? So I think I've had a Game Boy in my hands probably my whole life. And then eventually I got my own Game Boy when I was 4 or 5. It's actually interesting. I remember when I got potty trained. This is going all the way back, dude. When I got potty trained, I think that's what it was. No. Sorry. When I used to suck my thumb. It was like a problem. I guess my mom didn't like it. And when I learned to stop sucking my thumb, my grandpa promised he would either buy me a Game Boy or a pop gun. I don't know if you know what a pop gun is, but it's basically a BB gun that can't shoot anything. And yeah, I remember going to the store with him and saying, Grandpa, I want the Game Boy. And at this point, it was probably 95. So like, I don't know, they're probably $50 maybe. I don't know. And he was like, and I remember he asked the employee at the store, like, for a 4-year-old, would a Game Boy or 3-year-old, however old I was, would a Game Boy or a pop gun be better? And the employee said, probably a pop gun. And honestly, I got the pop gun and it was like, I love it. Like it was, I loved that gun. I felt like, I don't know, kind of like Daniel Boone as a kid. Like I grew up in a kind of a rural area. So really I wasn't shooting anything, but I might as well have been, you know. But we had the Game Boy and then eventually I did get my own Game Boy. We had a Super Nintendo and then we got a Super Game Boy for it. But Game Boy, like specifically for me, like, I don't know, like I freaking, the game is a product, like both in 1989 and in 2025, the Game Boy, like there's a good reason why people love making chiptune on it. Like the sound chip, the sound is a hardware design, even the fact that it runs on 4 AA batteries. And like, it like, you know, now people put these screens and all this stuff that draw a lot of power. But like, if you take a stock Game Boy, maybe put some fresh caps in it, you know, it'll last like 20 hours on a pair of AA batteries. So they're very like robust, right? Like you can drop a Game Boy. I dropped my Game Boy a lot. Like the plastic, you know, Nintendo just nailed plastic. So I just love Game Boys. And I remember taking one apart in high school. I got into like Xbox modding and kind of started learning a little bit about like soldering and electronics. I remember taking a Game Boy apart and just looking at it and like, I was like, I want to make a game. Like, I want to make my own Game Boy. Like, this doesn't look that complicated. Like, there aren't that many parts on it. Like, I don't know what they all do, but like, and especially like, you know, I don't know when this was 2007 or whatever. It's like, it's got like, how hard could it be? Right. It's like, turns out like, you know, the definition of a Game Boy, like, I mean, there are a lot of definitions that you can say I made a Game Boy, but like, you're talking about the plastic shell, You're talking about like the electronics, the CPU. Like, are you going to make that in silicon? Are you going to use an old one? Are you going to use an FPGA? Like, does that even mean that it's a Game Boy? And if you're using an FPGA, you sure as heck aren't going to get 20 hours on four AA batteries, right? So it's just like all these things. Like the more I learned about what a Game Boy was, the more interesting and fascinating, and the more I wanted to build my own Game Boy. And I was just always a nerd. You mentioned your favorite retro game is Zach McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders, right? Maniac Mansion. What did you say it was?
Yeah, it was Maniac Mansion.
Okay, sorry. I didn't do a lot of the LucasArts stuff. That is LucasArts, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Sierra, so I did a lot of like this is actually extremely relevant because I was a nerd growing up. I loved Game Boys. I loved Sierra point-and-click adventure games. And I loved a band called the Aquabats. Have you ever heard of the Aquabats?
Oh, man. Yes. I was so into the Aquabats when I was a teenager.
Shout out Aquabats, totally. Dude. And Yo Gabba Gabba on Apple TV. I was watching it yesterday. Like, it's legit. They're still rocking it. I think they actually just played at Coachella. Like, yeah, they're killing it. Anyways, the Aquabats. So they had a web forum, the Aquabats Super Cadet Forum, that I would hang out on online. And one day a guy posted a cover of Super Rad that he did on an NES. And I guess I don't know at that point if it was Family Tracker. It's like Family Tracker, Super Rad. And I was like, you know, it was just like, it sounded like kind of like Mario Brothers, but it was Super Rad. And I was like,
yeah,
at that time, I was actually independently developing my own like Sierra and Adventure Game Studio. It's like an open source game adventure point and click thing. I was developing my own just like for fun during the summer, my own Aquabats point and click adventure game. And I needed music for it, like kind of retro old school sounding music. I didn't really know anything about it at that time. And so I was like, dude, can I use this in my game, first of all? And like, he was like, yeah, sure. And did you know that there are like a whole, like there are people that do this. This is a thing that people do. And I was like, what? You know, totally blown away. And he dropped a link. You can probably go look at archive.org and find this forum thread. He dropped a link to 8bitpeoples.com, Anna Monoguchi Power Supply EP. If you haven't listened to Anna Monoguchi Power Supply EP, that was like, if you know about Anna Monoguchi, but like that was when Peter, I think it was just him, like in his bedroom, basically, like freaking good. Like, and at that point I was hooked. Like, what is this chiptune crap? What is like, what do I need to do? How do I do this? And I think I bought like a flash cart from Nonfinite Electronics. It was a web store. This guy, he was a musician as well. Anthony Bradshaw was his name. He actually passed away a couple of years ago. So rest in peace, Anthony. He's a really nice guy. I met him at Little Sound Assembly 20, I don't know, one of the Little Sound Assemblies when he played there. I met him there. Great guy. And I bought it like an EMS 64 USB card. It was like this old, it was like the best we could do. You remember those? And it was like,
yeah. I know those. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were, whatever. It's like the software was such a nightmare though. So I bought that.
That's the problem. You can't even flash those unless you have like either an older PC or you just like disable driver signing.
Yeah. Well, that was it back in the day. So it was like, you had to have an older PC or disable driver signing. Nowadays there's open source tools that at least, I haven't tried, you know, recently, but it was just like, that's what you had to do back then. So I like flashed LSDJ. I like got a backlight mod, I think probably also from Nonfinite, put that in there, started messing around with LSDJ. It was just cool. And then what happened was I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So I went on a 2-year mission in Kentucky. So it was like a volunteer service. Like, I don't know if the missionaries have ever knocked on your door. That was like me.
Yes.
But what was cool, dude, this is rad, is part of that, like, you're supposed to just do like straight up community service. Like, so like just in the area that you're at, like I was in this random places in Kentucky, like figure out a way to just do community service. So I would always go and seek out the thrift stores, dude. And I would volunteer there and we'd do work for them, you know, legit. But you'd be able to get like in the back room, you know, and like see some of the stuff before it goes out on the shelf. So like I would just buy up like any retro game stuff that I could find, like at these backwoods thrift stores. I walked into one time, dude, there was a stack like Super Nintendo games, including Super Mario RPG, Chrono Trigger, Mario Kart, like And like, you know, this lady is like, we've just been helping her out. So she sold them to me for $5. And it's like, those are my treasures. Like, I would have dreams about these. Like, you know what I mean? Like walking into a place. So like basically over the, like, I got home from my mission and I got, and I had like literally, dude, I had nothing. I moved. I can show you the picture. I moved from where my family was living in Texas back out here to Utah. And I literally, I had like the clothes on my back and like a couple of big bins fully, like I had like 8 NESs, you know, and like a bunch of DMGs. I liked all the different colors and a bunch of games. Like that was like literally all I had, you know, like I just love that stuff so freaking much. I can't leave it alone. Right. And you probably get it. Right. Like, I don't know what it is, but like, and then like you open a bin of like NESs, man, there's like a bunch of them in there. And like this smell, I don't know. Like, it's just, there's nothing like it. Like, and so I would hang out on chipmusic.org. It was this website, this web forum that my buddy, now my friend, I call him a friend and, you know, huge inspiration to me, Trash 80, Timothy Lamb. If you haven't listened to his music, go check it out. He is the guy behind the M8 tracker, the Dirty Wave M8 now. Yeah, like literally freaking genius. Like he's the guy who wrote Arduino Boy code. So he set up this chipmusic.org forum. I'd hang out on there all the time. I just could not get, like, anytime somebody posted like electronic stuff, you know, like a circuit board, like I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how to solder, but like as a kid, I remember going into my parents' garage and like pulling out old motherboards my dad had and just staring at them. Like the components, like it looked like a little city. Like the capacitors were like, they looked like water tower, you know, water silos, and like the chips were like, and the resistors, maybe they were little cars. Like it almost looked like Sim City to me. You know what I mean? So I think from a very early age, I've just been so like electronics. So it's like electronics, retro, Game Boy, like pushing me my entire life. Like I just cannot get enough of these specific things. And then it was eventually kind of inevitable. And so I eventually decided I need to go to school, and I entered Brigham Young University up in Provo as an electrical engineering student because I wanted to learn how to make circuit boards, dude. I didn't know how to do it. Like, and at that time, like, I think Osh Park existed, but like not even really. Like it might have just been getting, so this stuff was like black art. Like it really was, like how you made a circuit board and how you actually did that, especially just as like a hobbyist. There was like the Ben Heck channel on YouTube, and he would like literally like laser cut like a circuit board on his, like, I, like just, you know, you do like home etching on copper, you know, printing out transparent film. Like, dude, it's just so unreachable, right? Like, so I wanted to go to college to learn how to make circuit boards. And I realized my first semester there that an electrical engineering degree does not teach you how to make circuit boards. In fact, I don't think they ever even cover that ever. They teach you how to do physics and math about electricity, but like, by all means, I'm not knocking it, but as far as just like a dude who wanted to learn how to make his own Game Boy, it was not relevant to me. I mean, I actually had an internship working at a hardware company, and there's this guy who's kind of one of my mentors, and he knew how to make circuit boards, and he was like, you can just do it. Like, it's not that hard. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, like, and he was like, yeah, like, he sent me a SparkFun article on like how to use Eagle. And I was like, oh, okay. You know? And like, I just started screwing around in Eagle. And I think probably the first circuit board I ever, well, okay. Because I also wanted to make chiptune, and I just found the Arduino Boy thing really cool. And I wanted to use MIDI. MIDI was cool, right? I kind of knew how to play the piano. So it's like, I felt like if I could use a MIDI keyboard, maybe that'd be really fun with the Game Boy. And I tried to like hand build, like, you know, my own Arduino Boy from that old hand drawn schematic that Trash 80 released, and it just failed. Like, it was just too hard for me. And I felt like the wires I got lost in, if I had a nice clean circuit board, I'd be able to just put all the parts down where they needed to go and, you know, have it work. So the first thing I ever tried to design was an Arduino Boy, and it did not work. It just didn't work. That was quite discouraging. But then there was another place that had an open source Arduino Boy shield. And what was that? I think it was designed by Firebrand Boy. I cannot remember where it came from, but it was made in Eagle, and they had released the Eagle files. So I downloaded that and looked at it. And I think I did make some that were like just straight up that design and like just for my own like use. And keep in mind, like I was a poor college kid at this time. We like literally had just had our first baby. So like I remember this is how, okay, you want to know how Catsco Electronics got started. This is how Catsco Electronics got started. The summer, so I had my internship. We had our baby and I wanted to make an Arduino boy. So I got this PCB. And there was a place called dirtypcbs.com that was like kind of one of the first places where you could get PCBs made in China, like affordably, but the minimum order quantity was 10. And so I looked at it and I was like, I don't need 10. I only need one. So I posted on chipmusic.org that I was going to make some Arduino boys. And if anybody would be interested in buying one of the extra 9. And so I made that first batch just for myself, like literally taking out like a $50 personal bank loan from my wife and I's joint checking account, like stressed out that like we wouldn't be able to afford groceries now. And I was able to sold all 10 of them, right? Like I was like, okay, like, you know, after the 9th one sold and somebody else still wanted one, I was like, you know, fine. Like I'll delay my own gratitude for this and I'll just make another batch and that'll be cool. So I think I did that like a couple of batches that summer, you know, it's like I'd make 10 at a time, like order the components. I learned very quickly that people don't like soldering. They just want to buy something that works. There are people that are nerds like us, but I think like if you're a musician and not so much a nerd about electronics that you just want to like, you want to pre-soldered. So I found out that I spent a lot of my time just soldering through-hole components on these Arduino boys. And basically from that point on, it was just iterative. Like I worked with a really great guy. He goes by Foxing Hour now. He makes modular video synthesizers, dude. This, you want to talk about black magic, modular video synthesis. This guy knows it. He knows the dark arts, but he is an Eagle wizard. PCB layout, like, he's just so good at it. So I would basically like, it's like, okay, we have our Arduino boys, right? Like, so the next thing I need to make is an MGB card, because you have to have MGB. Like an Arduino boy on its own is an incomplete product. You can't plug it into your Game Boy. It won't do anything. You have to have the cart to go with it. And at that time, like doing the MPC5, like getting a mapper, you know, you'd have to use like a CPLD, and they weren't even open source. Like, It was just not something that was really done. The pirate carts had started coming out, but they were pretty low quality at that time. And so it's like, we need an MGB cart. And so he's like, well, dude, it's like you just throw a freaking 5-volt chip down on a board and wire it up with the right layout. Like, it's solved. Like there was that flasher architecture, the Rainer-Ziegler design, if that rings any bells. But these Polish students had designed and open sourced a... This is like going all the way back. They designed an open source, like a Game Boy cart flasher and basic cartridge that eventually, and it was like supposed to be GPL, and it got ripped off by Jose from 8-Bit Collective. And that's kind of why that whole thing went down. But that was kind of before my time. But anyways, it was a solved problem. So he's like, look, I can just make you like a flash cart. And so then it was like, okay, sweet. Like, so now, you know, I can buy like reproduction, like crappy reproduction plastic from China. It's not as good as the OEM stuff. So when you say I want to make my own Game Boy, it's like, well, technically it's a cartridge, but it's not really, you know, like, but you know, basic 32K cart. Now you can get our MGB flash. And it's like, well, now if we have a 32K cart, like we can offer, you know, all, like a lot of the ROMs that you were offering, right? Like just the random homebrews that people would want to get. And it's like, sweet, dude, I would sell them for $10. And I would make like probably half of that was in profit. Like I would make, now this was the hard part though. All of that was hand assembled. So I would squirt out solder paste, and they're surface mount parts. So I'd squirt out solder paste, place the chips, hot air, solder them. It was a lot of labor, but it was a labor of love, you know, like, and I was learning and building technique. And like, I don't know, dude, like just like as a kid who wanted my own Arduino boy and like had to go figure out how to build one, like, and then being able to like interact with people who wanted their own Arduino boy. And then now they didn't have to go figure out how to build one. Like, it was just so awesome and rewarding, right? Like, yeah, sure. Yeah. On one hand, I was making money. I mean, it was a good, I guess, if nothing else, it was a good part-time job during college, but I never looked at it as a business. It was always just a hobby. Like, it was just like, you know, like, to be honest with you, I thought that there was like some finite limit on how many people in the entire world would want an Arduino boy. Like, I thought, like, surely no more than like 1,000 Arduino boys in the entire world would ever need to exist, right? Like, surely there cannot be more than 1,000 people. And it turns out, dude, the world is huge. Like, it's hard to actually fully grasp how big the effing world is, right? Like, I sold Arduino boys to like Russia, to Guam, like to countries I'd never even heard of, like all over the world to these people. And it's like, and they just kept buying them. And I'm sure you probably experienced that. It's like,
I'm having, you know, that exact same experience. Like, for example, you know, the conflict in Ukraine, like someone actually was trying to find a way that they could get an Arduino boy into the country. Yeah, you know? And I think they ended up like having to go through some third party shipping company where they, you know, they pretend they're not in the country, and then they like let someone from the other country buy it, and then they get it, and then it goes from there.
It's basically like black market shipping. Yeah, dude, that's legit. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Cause it's like, that's who, like, we're not the conflict. We're not these like a-holes with guns. Like, I don't know, maybe some of us are, but I don't think we are. Like, I don't think you are. And it's like, dude, we just want Arduino boys, man. Like, we just want to like screw around with like nerdy crap and just have fun. And like, yeah, I think that.
Right.
That,
and also
there's a lot of unity. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I mean, I was having a lot of the same thoughts about like, how many of these could I, you know, realistically do people want? Because I started out kind of the same way where I made like, I think five, you know, I think I made five, you know, one for me and then four that I could just, you know, maybe I'll try Etsy out to see if I can just, you know, I think I also tried eBay too.
Yeah.
And they were really, I mean, it was still kind of a do it yourself. Like, you would have to use your own breadboard wires to kind of connect it to the, you know, like I hadn't really at that point thought of this is going to be a business and maybe I should make a product that maybe has like some features, you know, like, but those like sold like immediately. And
really?
Like, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, and why don't I make a product that actually I have, you know, actually comfortable selling, more comfortable selling, looks better. And like you were doing, like just iterating. So like, you know, every time I'd buy more PCBs, there would be an enhancement to it, you know, and all this stuff was, I just used through hole and I solder every single one of these by hand.
Yep.
So what, you know, I designed a PCB to make it as small as possible while still keeping it through hole, you know, like jumping those traces from one place to the next if I had to, you know, and just kind of getting better at PCB design. I think that just wanted to sell something that I could be proud of, because the first one wasn't really. And I think a lot of the people I sold the original one to, like, I just sent them the new one for free. I was like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I get
here's
that.
Here's a better version of that, you know, because.
You're like, just like, ah, this kind of shiz. Like, yeah, this one's
right.
And it's like, you realize, like, the PCB is like, and it's like, yeah, especially when you're first starting out, it's like, I don't know, like, I just kind of like soldering. Like, I still do, you know? So it's like, I don't know, like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah, I ended up getting pretty good at, I mean, I was already into soldering before. I had done things in the past, and I had a pretty good soldering iron.
Nice.
Like my dad, he was just a pool man, and a lot of times he would take broken things out of, you know, a pool filter or whatever, and we'd go back in the truck, and he'd plug in the soldering iron into the truck. And I was kind of fascinated by that. I was like, that's cool. So he taught me how to do it.
That's cool.
And, you know, yeah.
That's way cool. Yeah. Soldering. Yeah, man. Like, well, it's like you touched on it too with like, so where are you at now with, so, you kind of started there. Where are you at now then? Like what's, yeah. Like what, I guess, where are you at now and what's next for your shop? And I didn't even mention it. It's Hobby Chop on I almost said Reddit. Hobby Chop on Etsy.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And it's cool to hear that Etsy is still a viable platform, because I always like just self-hosted directly. I did like crossless on eBay early on, but it just kind of became too much effort. But this is, I think this is cool. Like, if you're like, you're telling, yeah, that's really cool. You just sold them straight up on Etsy. You're like Arduino boy. And it's like random people just bought these.
Yeah. And it didn't take long either.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Within a week, like they were all gone. And I was just like, but at that point I started to feel like after I knew I could do better, you know, cause I'm always thinking, even like pretty much in anything I do, like if I think that I can do something better, I become like neurotic about it.
Yeah.
Like, let's change this and get something better like immediately.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, I was kind of ashamed of those ones. So again, like I was like, I don't want to see this show back up like as my history of selling things. Right. So it's like, I'll send these guys a new one because I know this one is way better and they don't have to put it together themselves. It's going to be way more easy to use. And, So yeah. So like for the shop in the future, like I'd really like to get into just having them pre-assembled because it's, I like soldering, but sometimes it's like,
I have an answer
when you're
for
doing
you.
The same thing over and over again.
Oh, I think I have an answer. I have a plausible answer for that problem, and it has trade-offs. JLC PCB, which I'm sure you know about, has an assembly service, and it is so freaking good. They have their parts too. What's the component? LCSC is the same company, and I don't know if you know about LCSC yet. Do you know about LCSC?
No.
Oh, dude, I'm so freaking stoked that I get to tell you. Dude, LCSC.com. So it's like the component arm of JLC PCB. Like just for like your like resistors and crap. Like, again, so here's the trade-off, because you have to buy this crap from China. Like, so I don't know. Like, but if you go in, so what happens is JLC PCB has a specific parts library for their assembly service. So like if you're just like putting resistors and LEDs down, it's like, they literally will basically assemble it for you for essentially free. Like, you're just buying the cost of the components, and they're so good at like packaging and shipping and doing it all. And I would say for me, because that didn't exist early on. So what happened for me was like, I went from through hole soldering stuff to manually reflowing surface mount stuff because it was faster. And I eventually learned how to do a stencil using Osh stencils, and eventually my favorite PCB was PCB Way. I loved them. So I'd get my stencils and my boards made there. But they were, because they were a little bit better for higher. Like, eventually I would be ordering, dude. It was wild, dude. I'd be ordering like hundreds of boards at a time, right? Like hundreds of thousands of through hole soldering that I had to do, right? And then so I was just like manually with a hot air gun. I eventually built my own reflow oven with a toaster oven, which worked. But then I bought there's a T972, or there's like a Chinese default toaster oven, a reflow oven that you can buy. And then you have to like flash custom firmware. Like, this is just being a nerd, dude. Like, you can flash custom firmware on and make it work better. So it's like, I learn and I work my way up and like learn all this stuff. And then eventually it's like, I learn how to do like how to work with a PC. They call it PCBA, right? PCB assembly house, to actually assemble the boards. And that was PCB Way. So it's like, I started ordering, just a little 32K carts. Cause at that point I was selling them with the Arduino board. I had like a starter bundle that came with the, when you were talking about this too, like having kind of like, some guilt about previous product iterations and using that to like fuel, future improvement. I had this kind of like Christmas morning principle that I would try to follow. That was like, there are kids out here that are asking their moms for Arduino boys for Christmas, and like their poor mothers have to come to my website and like figure out what even is like, what do they even need to do to make this thing happen, right? So I had this Christmas morning print, like batteries must be included kind of thing. So it was like Arduino boy starter bundle came with the Arduino boy. It would literally be the mode would be pre-selected to MGB, so like they could plug it in and work. Came with a link cable, came with a USB cable to power the thing if it needed it, and it came with the copy of MGB. So it was like, and I, like on the product page, it's like, all you need is a Game Boy. Like, you need a Game Boy that can boot this game, plug your link cable in, and a MIDI device, And so it's just like doing stuff like that, like making it as easy as possible for people to, and I never even got there, right? Like, but anyway, so I guess what I was trying to say with that is then iterating over the product design to design, it's called design for manufacturability, which is like this huge nerd out area that I love. Just like you kind of said, like making the board as small as you can, like just things like that, like knowing how it's going to be manufactured. And it's just a learning process, like you're doing right now. Like, you get it back and then like sometimes the board house will do something weird because it's like they just would rather do it that way, and they don't really communicate that with you. But I would say in 2025, and this was just starting to happen at the end of my run with Casco Electronics, JLC PCB assembly service, man, because they can do five quantity. They'll solder it. They can even do through-hole stuff, although they soldered some pots like on the wrong side of the board for me once. Like, like upside down, you know, like, oh, so like, no, the JLC PCB, like, and it, yeah, if you, even if you use Easy EDA, their online CAD, like that's what I've been using lately. I'm a new, like, I never got, like I said, I had my buddy Foxing Hour. He would do most of the layout for me. Cause he was just like, so like, I would early on, I would like give him my best effort, like real. And I would like learning and like reducing V account. And then I would send it over him, like just to give it a once over. And it was just like, he's just an artist. You know how these people are. They're, yeah, mm-hmm. It's an art to it. And he definitely has a skill that I don't have. So, but that's my advice, man. JLC PCB assembly service. It's unfortunate. Like, I don't know where you sit on manufacturing in China. I'm not like, we both live in America. So I think ideally it'd be made here, you know, like, but, I know Tim with his, Dirty Wave M8, like that's a thing that he figured out how to manufacture that in the US, or as in the US as it could possibly be, like including, US based assembly houses. I think he even gets the boards made in the US, like, and he, like, it's gnarly, like it's hard, but
I find that guy to be fascinating, yeah, too.
No, he is, you
know,
man.
I wore like another call just to talk about him, because I know a lot about him too.
He is like I've been to his
forums, and I remember
shop.
Seeing you show up there, and you've been to, he has a physical shop.
Well, yeah,
or like you mean online?
No, dude, he has. Well, I don't want to dox him here, but he has a location that he works professionally out of, and like he's literally Batman, dude. He literally like. He's not like fighting crime, but like he literally is the Bruce Wayne of electronics. Like that, he is so freaking smart. Like, yeah, I would love to get him on the show. There's only podcast appearance I know of him. He was on, I think it was Hackaday had a podcast that he went on. So you should definitely go.
Yeah, I read the transcript of that.
Yeah,
I saw that.
But
I mean, I've listened to his music too. I mean, he's a fascinating person. Obviously, a genius.
Genius. Literally, like from him. I mean, so smart.
It's hard to like weigh yourself against like a person like that, because they're pretty much they're like the emperor of chiptune. It's like, you know,
The thing I think I learned with that though is like, I don't know, like I think everybody's good at different things. So it's like, Trash 80 is the best Trash 80 there is. Like, dude, that guy, if I was trying to be Trash 80, I would lose. Like if it was a contest and we were both trying to be Trash 80, he would kick my freaking butt so hard. But I think if it was a contest and he was trying to be Dave DeGraw, I think I'd kick his butt. And I think the question is like, what makes Trash 80 Trash 80? What makes you you? And I think one of the things that I was good at that maybe, okay, this was kind of some of the context for Catskill Electronics starting as well, because there had been like a couple of high profile things in the chiptune community where somebody had designed something really, really cool and started taking pre-orders or trying to sell it. And then it just went like, I don't know what happened. Like they just got overwhelmed and then kind of screwed a bunch of people. MIDI Nest.
Was it the GB303 by chance?
GB303 was one of them. That was a big one when I was first starting. Witnessing that and knowing Furtech, like I know him personally, like knowing who he is, he's not a bad guy. Like when he's even talked about it, I don't know. MIDI Nest was another big one. I don't know if you know about the MIDI Nest, and it still sucks, dude, because MIDI Nest truly is unparalleled as a product. Like, I've talked to Noel Sleep about this, because I had my own Famimi MIDI that was made by a guy in Japan that I would import. That was so sweet. Like, you just talk about like meeting random cool people. This is what I'm talking about. When you start like, and you start interacting with people on that level, but you can't even speak the same language. I don't even like, I honestly don't even know the guy's name. I know what his online handle is, and I've met him in real life, but like, the language we speak is our passion for retro technology. Like truly, like anyway, so meeting people like that. And anyways, what I was trying to say is it was kind of this shadow of like these big, like, I don't know. It just felt like it sucked. Like it was, cause it was like GB303 was like so rad. Like we all just want to play with one, you know? And so I think one of the things, I guess, like I had a principle that I would say like two wrongs never make a right. Like that was just one of the guiding principles of Catskill Electronics when I started it. And it was like, I'm never going to take money for something that I cannot like deliver. Like if I don't have it in my hand, like if the if it's in the mail and the mailman kicks it down the ditch, like I'm not going to take that risk. I don't want to have your money. I don't want to like, I until I know for sure that I'm going to be able to, at least on my end, ship it to you, I don't want your money. Like, please, I don't want your money until I'm ready to take it, right? That was a big thing that I would do. So, like, no pre-orders, as tempting as it was for me. I think maybe, and it sucked, dude, because I know that some people would get stressed out. Like, because later, like, I did, like, the YM2017 Genesis console. Are you familiar with that project? Genesis cart? Okay, we want to get into the annals of Catskill Electronics history. We eventually did. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, there's a bunch of products that I know that people ask me about because I'm in the same sphere, and they're like, you know, when are you going to come out with this? When are you going to come? Yeah, but there's only so many things as one person I can, like, reasonably do during the day and also have a day job.
Yep.
And I'm already, like, almost at my maximum level of, like, things I can create with the space that I have and, like, the time I can spend. So, I mean, a lot of these things, you know, some of these things that you talk about, I might not have heard about just because I just don't have the capacity right now to, like, research them, but I've been asked about these things, you know.
Oh, really?
And so they're, like, kind of, like, in the back of my mind, like, maybe someday, you know, but for now I'm still iterating, like, the things I'm doing now, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess
as long as I'm doing that, like, I know that if I do something new, like, I take all of that experience that I use for these things that I'm making and I'm putting it forward to, like, you know, something even more amazing.
Yes.
That I can do a really good job on.
Yeah.
And not leave, like, these other things kind of, like, half-baked, you know.
Yep. I totally get it. Like, it's like, yeah, like, there are a lot of directions you could, like, well, that's what I kind of said, like, what's the next step? Because it's like, obviously, there's probably, a thousand different steps you could take, right? Like, including, like, a step backwards or shutting down or whatever, right? And it's just kind of like, is like a business entrepreneur, like, I don't know, man. It's just interesting to follow that path and to make mistakes and to learn. Not even necessarily mistakes, because it's like I mentioned, like, with even scheduling you on this podcast, like, that's a thing I'm learning. Like, I'm looking at this podcast, doing it, physically recording it and distributing it. I'm learning how to do a podcast. You know what I mean? So it's like, when you're doing a business like you are, and this is what we're talking about, like, we're learning how to do electronics. And then it's like, oh, well, we kind of know how to do, like, soldering now, but, like, how do you, like, what if you need to make 100 of them? Like, you know, how do you do that kind of soldering? Or, like, what's next? And honestly, that's the, like, I say, oh, make them on JLCPCB. But, like, I also think that, like, just, like, really cool boutique, custom high-end electronics have just as much place in the market as, you know, like, this sleek made in China Arduino boy, right? Like, you build, like, an Arduino boy Furby and sell it for $200. It's like, you probably could, right? Like, and is that more worth your time than sitting here and trying to figure out how to make 100 okay Arduino boys? Like, I just think it's like, you can go any direction and it's just fun to be able to do that, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, like, and I'd love to have these things just manufactured for me, but at the same time, and this kind of goes back to what you were saying before, like, how many people in the world want an Arduino boy? Well, that number is probably way less now than it was before, maybe. Or it's just,
dude, I don't know. I mean, I think it's growing, dude. That's the problem.
I've been in business for about 2 years and I've put together, like, over 500 of these. So I'm not sure, like, how that compares to your experience when you were selling them, but you're saying that you're ordering, like, thousands of boards. So obviously
that's what I mean. So, like, because it's like the Arduino boy I made in 2015 is not the same as the Arduino boy I made in, when did I close? Like, the last iteration I had was called the Arduino boy Pro Micro. And it's like, we just learn. And so it's like, you're not even necessarily selling the Arduino. It's like, how many people want to buy that version of your Arduino boy? And so it's like, the first version of, like, your kind of crappy breadboard Arduino boy, like, maybe 5 people want to buy that, right? But then if, like, I don't know, like, you learn, and it's like, my version of that was the Teensy Boy Pro, which had USB-C, like, a PCB. I saw you had a PCB edge connector, you know, for the cable. Makes it super cheap and easy to manufacture because you don't have to solder on that through-hole link connector. Like, totally manufactured, like, 100% made in China. All I had to do was flash the bootloader and the code. And it was sweet, too, because it had the Arduino Leonardo on it. So it did USB MIDI in addition to... Oh, and then we had the TRS jacks for the MIDI DIN. And it's just like, so that was my iterate. Like, that was where I took it, right? And honestly, like, the only reason why that product isn't sold today is because nobody wants to sell it. So if you're interested in selling that product, it is open source, and I would love to just, you know, point you in the right direction there.
Yeah, the as part of my iterations, you know, I looked at like hundreds of pictures of Arduino boards that people had made, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, what makes theirs good? Like, can I include that in my design too? And like, one of the things I saw from yours is you had the edge connector. And at the time I was like, I don't know. I think I was using like a DIN connector and like soldering the pins on that. So it was like a custom cable.
Yeah.
Yep. There was also like, I could just put a GBC connector on there because those are available.
That's what I did initially. Yep.
Right. And, but then it's like,
how do you get that with a DMG?
Well then you have to have a crossover cable. And then I was having problems with like, I'd order these crossover cables from China and like literally more than half of them just didn't work. Like,
dude, I know how to fix them.
Wire was bridge. Yeah.
I know how to fix them.
I might have threw them away. But,
okay. I don't know how to fix them. Yeah. They're unfixable. Never mind.
Okay. I mean, so I just don't offer the crosslink cable anymore, but
the green ones.
Yeah.
Dude. Okay. I know how to fix them. And I'll just tell you. Okay. Because I had the same problem. I was devastated. I ordered like 200 of them and like half of them didn't work. And the seller, this is not necessarily true, but the pins on the inside, like if you look inside of it, it's like on each side, it's almost like this two pieces of, well, you can't see my hands. It's two pieces of metal kind of curved over. What happens is they'll be touching, dude, on the inside of the freaking thing. So what you have to do is just get one of your little PCB connectors that you have, stick it in there and just like rock it back and forth and get those pins to bend up away from each other. Then they won't be freaking grounded anymore. Anyways, next time you try that, give it a shot. Because, yeah, once I learned that, it was like, whoa, my life just got better.
Yeah, I tore one down. And like
I did too.
Like one of the pins, I can't remember which pin was like grounded. And I was like, well, obviously that's not going to work. That's a data pin.
Look in the ends. Like when it's not plugged in, look into the end of the connector and look at those pins in there and see if they're touching. Because I built like a tester, like, you know, I had like LEDs for each line to like try. Like I was pulling my hair out, dude. And it's just like those pins get bent. You need to push it. They're touching. So it's like, yeah, they'll ground. Like the data pin will just be grounded or whatever. Anyways. And it sucks, especially because there's four ends. So like the possibility of that problem happening is multiplied by four, like, cause it can happen. And a lot of times it happens on all of them. So just FYI on that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, because I had trusted also so much in these when I bought them, because they work, you know, the ones that I initially tested I wasn't testing every single cable, right? I didn't unwind it. Plug it in, because that was a hassle. But then after that happened, I was like,
I went through the same thing, because like you get like the first email and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. And then it's like you get like the third or fourth email and you're like, okay, what the heck is going on with these cables, you know? And it's funny because like just stuff like that you learn, like even like, you know, I think one of the products I had was a micro USB, and people would email me and be like, hey, it doesn't show up as anything when I plug into my computer, but it powers on. And like, it turns out that like most of the micro USB cables that are just laying around anymore are like charging only. So they don't even have the data pin. So it's like, I don't know. It's like, so at what point do you just start including a cheap USB cable that you know works just so you don't have to deal with somebody asking you, you know what I mean? Like, it's just stuff like that.
I mean, like immediately, right? You're like, I don't want this ever to happen again, right?
And it's like a USB cable is 10 cents. Like, I'll just give you one so you don't, like, I don't have to look at your email. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not like that I don't like want to provide great customer support, but like I just want to make sure that what I'm shipping has like the least, you know, probability of it showing up. And for some reason,
Christmas morning, like you don't want someone to have to email you to get their Christmas morning present. You just want them to be playing with it, right?
Right. Or you ship it to Ukraine, right? Like,
yes.
You're going to have to ship it to Ukraine again. Like, that's not something I want to have to do. It's, you know, especially if I'm shipping something overseas, paying all that shipping cost, or they paying the shipping cost or whatever, you know, if I'm going to have to provide a replacement, you know, I'm going to do it. It's just going to, you know, be a, you know, a cut of the profit, but it's important that they have what they ordered more than anything. Like, I think that's like my philosophy with this business. It's probably very similar to yours, is like, I want them to be more than satisfied, like open it up, use it. Like I want them to be immediately happy with it and like continue to work and like have, you know, fundamentally like no problems.
Yep. Like, and it's like, it just from like the whole experience too, from like the ordering, from the shipping, And that's why I stopped mechanical electronics, is because eventually my passions, like the monetary, like, you know, it's like at that point I had three kids. I wasn't in college anymore. I had a full-time stable job. So it's like, and a lot of the fuel for mechanical electronics was like, well, I can buy like another Game Boy, because it's like, you know, like that's a business expense, and like I can buy a soldering iron, and like I have all, like, and then it just kind of like, you know, you just move on with life. It's like, I don't know, just kind of like the order, like an order would come in, and instead of feeling happy about it, you're feeling like, great, that's one more thing I have to do now. And eventually it just got to the point where I wasn't able to provide the customers, like the customer experience that, you know, like I was comfortable providing. Like, I'm not gonna, my shipping times got super delayed. Like, there were orders I wouldn't ship, like toward the end, I'd like be like once a month I'd ship out orders. Like, I just had no motivation to do it. And people would be emailing me like, dude, what the crap? And it's like, yeah, man, I get it. Like, I get it. I just, it's like, there's no, and it's not like I can be like, hey, go to this guy's Etsy shop and buy an Arduino boy. It's like, I'm the only guy doing it. And I built this business that feels unsustainable now, because it's like every order I ship.
At that time you had three young kids, right? At least some young kids. And I know how that is. I have two. And that like just consumes you, almost, you know. And if you're not taking care of the kids, like, I mean, I'm just going to be thinking about it, you know. Like,
there's only, luckily, like, you can only stay up so late, you know.
Yeah. Like, and if you're staying up late, then you're kind of like not there mentally for like family. But luckily, like, I kind of got into this when the kids were growing up a little bit, so I don't have that much to worry about.
Well, that's kind of why I feel like it's a decent thought to, like, instead of focusing on scale, focusing on quality. Like, if, like, again, like, cause I feel like if I only had to ship out one order a month, like, you know what I mean? So it's like, I ship out 30 orders a month, once a month, and whatever the total, you know, I made $1,000 or whatever, how much those orders were. Or I ship one order a month that's $1,000. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what would be like the best Arduino boy of all time? Like, made, like, think about like the classic, like, you know, you're a retro guy, like classic synth. We're talking like walnut, like real, you know, metal with like nice printing. Like, what would be like the best Arduino boy of all time? Like, is that, and it would cost a lot more, right? It would cost much more than the Casco Electronics Arduino Boy Pro Micro made in China. But I don't know. Like, I think that there's just as much validity in that as there is in scaling, you know, like, let's just make a million of these things. But
right. And those exist too. Or they did exist, you know, like really, really fancy ones with like acrylic tops. You know,
I would still love to see it. Like, you know, that, and well, and that's how Analog, you know, the company making all the retro systems, initially on, they were just like handmade NESs where they pulled chips. And I think they did like Neo Geo stuff too, but you know, we're coming up on time, so I want to make sure that what else do you have in your mind? And I just want to make sure that we get the most out of this.
Yeah, we'll probably have to do another one of these, because you know, as we keep talking, like, kind of like more avenues of thought come to me, and I know I can't entertain every single thing. But like I said, like I took inspiration from your design, specifically the edge connector, and then the only problem I had was, like, sometimes the connector would come out.
Yep.
And I can kind of mitigate that with the shell I was putting in, but it would only mitigate if you're using the damage end.
Yep.
So, like, I just separated them both. And then was, like, adding USB MIDI, because Pro Micro is available now, and they're not expensive. So that was kind of a blessing, because people were always asking about that. Like, can I plug this in my computer? It will show up in my DAW. I'm like, no, sorry, I don't do that yet, you know.
Yeah, but USB MIDI is like, I felt like when I was able to offer, that's what I mean. It's like having like an Arduino Boy with USB MIDI versus an Arduino Boy with not USB MIDI is a different thing, right? Like, you would buy two of those.
Yeah. It's,
have you messed around like with any of the Pi Pico stuff or the RP2040? I mean, at all?
So that's something that's I'm going to be looking into soon, because I have this 3-chip. YM synth, and I was working with a guy, his name is Ben Baker, and he's developing Vortex Tracker 3.
Cool. And you're going to have hardware support
for the tracker? So it kind of already is there.
Whoa! Like, that is so rad.
He sent me, some beta versions of a YM player that is going to either be a plugin or built into the application.
Oh, that's so
and it
sick.
Totally works. It totally works. It's pretty awesome.
Does this sound like, so sick when you have it all like, oh my gosh, that was one of the products. Like I wanted to build like a VGM VJ system, like, but with like hardware chips, you know? So it's like, cause I would go to chiptune shows and like, I was like, that would be so sick, but kind of that's so cool, man. Just stuff. And that's what I mean. So it's like, this guy is like building this tracker and he's like, you know, like those connections, you know what I mean? And building the hardware, and it's so fun. It's so fun.
Yeah. So ironically, he was like, hey, I have this teensy YM synth, and you know, I've got it to work with Serial. But what I'm really looking for is more voices, you know, like, can we build a 3-chip one, you know? And at the time I had a 1-chip one. And I was like, yeah, I think we can do it. You know, like I Googled, like, you know, is there enough pins? There's enough data lines on Arduino to do this? You know, is it going to be fast enough? It seemed to check out. So I and this is all on my YouTube channel too, where I have pictures of it, where like I have several breadboards just like linked together. And there's just like so many breadboard wires just like going everywhere. And like actually having that thing work,
it took
a little bit of fiddling.
Yeah, dude.
But yeah, I was just like, oh my God. Okay, we could do this, you know?
Yeah.
And
so thrilling.
So he got one, and he had some other things he wanted to do too. Like it works fine with a Serial Play, and he wanted to include SID chip emulation.
Whoa!
But Pro Micro is not really up to the task, and so I'm probably going to rebuild this synth with a Pi.
Yeah, I've been.
That's the next.
There's these WaveShare, what's it called? RP2040. I can't remember what they're called. They're like, it's just like a little teeny RP2040 board with a USB-C connector. Because you know, like the official ones have freaking micro USB.
Yeah.
But man, like those RP2040s, they're crazy. Like they can do native USB. They can do anything. I've been using them because I built like controller adapters. Like I like using... I don't really play a lot of consoles, but I mostly emulate, you know? So it's like using an SNES controller. I like them. And it's just crazy. And that's the other thing from a user experience perspective, because the other problem with your Arduino is like shipping software updates or like you're like, oh yeah, download the Arduino IDE. And it's like, you know, so the Raspberry Pi stuff is nice because it's just drag and drop. Like it's just a firmware binary, but anyways, that's cool, man. And yeah, we will have to do a part 2 because I want to talk more about like Holy Grail products for you. You know, there were a couple of Holy Grail products for me that like, one of them was like a Dragon Derp, you know, just a really good solid Game Boy Flash cart. Never got around to it. So there are different, you know, pipe. I've actually still got a box of, I think there's about 40 Japanese super Game Boys in there. Cause I wanted to build my own Game Boy. You know, with a real, because you can use a Super Game Boy CPUs in a real DMG. So,
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. And next time, I'd like to talk about maybe like the homebrew aspect too, because, I mean, there's the chiptune stuff, but like I've been producing games for developers that kind of just didn't even think that they'd have their game on a cartridge, you know, and being able to provide that service. And I mean, that's kind of its own aspect of this. So
yeah. And I'm right there with you too, because that was, like I said, we had the 32K cart. So it's like, and then a developer's like, well, I made this game. Like, can you release it? And it's like, I mean, yeah, man, like, and stickers are pretty cheap. You know, it's like making a good quality sticker and a decent shell, like having that physical product and being able to sell it for, I think I would retail my 32K games for $15 or maybe 20. But like that, I want to talk more about that too, because I was moving so fast at the time that I didn't even really realize what we were doing there. But like game publishing, retro game publishing, I eventually worked my way up to meeting with the CEO of this company called D4 Enterprise in Tokyo, Japan, to try and license. I'll tell you this because you're a nerd. There's this game for the Game Boy, the original Game Boy, called I don't even know what it's called in English, the Earth Defense Force ZAS. ZAS. Have you ever heard of this game for Game Boy? It's a top-down shooter. Only came out in Japan, but it's like way good, like ZAS. And I tracked down there the intellectual property rights holder, and I was like, I want to release this in the US. Like, anyways, it didn't end up happening, but retro game publishing, yeah, like very, very cool. And I kind of forgot really that I even did that. Like I was thinking about it the other day and I was like, I don't even know, like, I would love to even just have like a collection of all the ROMs that I did publish. But see, and that's what we're wrapping up and I'm rambling, but you know, like that was an area where I didn't. So I started, like somebody's like, hey, I have a 32 gig game. Will you publish it? And it's like, sure. And then it's like, somebody's like, well, I have a Super Nintendo game. And you're like, like what? Well, you know, it's like, so we figured out how to make like Super Nintendo cards. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, it's just like, it's just interesting. Like, and there's all these avenues you can go down. You know what I mean? It's just, and the way that they present themselves. And I don't even know that there's necessarily like, right. Cause you know, on the podcast we talk about like, what's the definition of success? And like, I don't know, to some, like, obviously if you're not losing money on orders, that's successful. But more than that, it's like, are you having fun? Like, is it cool? Like, yeah, I would rather do the cool, fun stuff than the stuff that makes the most sense, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. And because, you know, I got into this, I met so many people, yeah. You know, I had a support Discord. I'll try to be fast, but, you know, I had a lot of people show up, a lot of, homebrew music, Game Boy developers showed up and was able to like convince them like, hey, can you add MIDI to this? You know? And through that, there was, you know, more iterations to the Arduino Boy software to handle that. You know, so and now we have a couple more games that we can play as synthesizers.
Really?
Like Drone Boy was one of the most recent ones. Drone Boy added MIDI support.
Cool.
And then Chord was like a totally new one where I just reached out to the guy and said like, hey, I love your thing. Like, how can we make it like play with MIDI? Cause that would be, you know, make it clock sync or something with the, cause it's a kind of an arpeggiator, synth more than like a, it's not like a five channel.
Yeah.
Like an MGB was, but, he's like, yeah. And so we did it.
That's so cool. Like I remember talking to the Chord guy too. Cause I was like, hey, can I release your thing? And it seems like actually there might have been like an exclusive version of Chord for Kitsch Bend that like, is Kitsch Bend still around, by the way? Do you know? Do you even know?
I think they just closed. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think they just closed. They closed their shop, I think, like a month ago.
To be honest with you, he was a good example to me of what not to do. And I'm not like really even trying to, I don't know him personally. I don't know anything about them, but yeah, like just, I don't know. Like it was just very defensive the way, like it wasn't open. Like yeah. I was like, I don't know. I really tried to run my business on open, like open source principles just cause it was like Trash 80 releasing the open source. It's like, how could I not? Like it would be disrespectful. Like, you know what I mean? Like to not, I mean, obviously I have to comply with GPL for myself, but even like, I don't have to release the hardware. Like, it's just software, right? Like, but it's like, that just feel like, again, for then somebody like you that can continue it on. I want for the legacy. Like, I'm not worried about people competing. It's like, dude, if you want to literally clone my product, like, honestly, to some extent, I don't know if you think about this, but it's like, if China started making Arduino Boys, my job, like, I could close up and I'd be happy. Like, if China was making Arduino Boys as good as they're making those, you know, retro handheld clones these days, if that was an art, like, I would love to go buy that for $30 from China, you know, like, it would be so high quality, but no, we are the ones who have to make it because I guess this it's our job, dude. Like people want them. We need Arduino Boys, dude. And we need you to make them for us. So keep it up.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, yeah, at the same time, I'm sorry to keep dragging this out,
no, go
but
ahead.
Like Arduino Boy is a gateway, you know, yeah, to other chiptune things and also the homebrew scene in general. And, you know, bringing awareness to like, oh, there's actual Game Boys, Game Boy games being made in 2025 still, you know, it's like, so if it was made, if the Arduino Boy was made in China, then I wouldn't have that visibility wouldn't be there.
Yeah. Anymore. It kind of lacks on the track. Some of the community.
Yeah.
With it.
And so like, I obviously my success is because of the Arduino Boy specifically, because that was the only thing I was selling at first. And now it's like people coming back and like being like, okay, I'll pick this up too. Or like the M232, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know? And
well, that was, we're wrapping up here, but that was one of my favorite things too, is seeing repeat customers. I don't know if Etsy shows you, I'm sure it does. It shows you like, if like how many times somebody's bought something from your store. Right. And then once you start going for years and like, and honestly, did you buy, I don't know. There were people that there were names. I don't even know who these people are, but there were names. And I'm sure if I saw their name, I'd be like, that dude bought a lot of stuff from me. I know, like, And it was just cool. Like, I don't know. It's it feels cool when you're able to make money without like capitalistically like extracting wealth. Like, it's just like a mutually beneficial exchange of goods instead of like, oh, you want to eat? Like, here, you must pay me. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like Arduino boys are cool, right? Like, anyways.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And like, people will message me and be like, you know, I had one back in the day from cat school. I lost it. You know, thank you for providing the service so I can buy it again, you know?
Well, so dude, any questions, like, seriously, any specific questions, like, even if it's just a problem, you have my Discord now, so feel free to hit me up. I'll try to get back to you. A lot of like the specific support stuff, like people will hit me up for cat school, like support specifically. And like that bums me out, but knowing that it was occasionally, but knowing that like, but if you're like, dude, like, how do I do this? Or like, and if I don't know, I'll tell you, but if I do know, I would, that's something I'm very passionate about. Like sharing then I don't know. It's like kind of weirdly gate kept, or maybe it's just uncommon knowledge, but like just making sure that it doesn't die is really, really important. So I'd love to help in any way I can. For what it's worth, I've given Trash 80 some advice when he was doing the M8 stuff. Mate, I don't know, what do they call it? M8, I call it M8. He ignored every piece of advice I gave him, and he's better off for it. So take that for what it's worth.
I have a Discord where any Arduino boy that was made, like, people even make them themselves and have questions like,
cool,
you know, why they're working and stuff. So
what is that? If people want to, so you mentioned, we already mentioned your hobby chop, etsy.com/shop/hobbychop, like pork chop, but hobby chop. And then what about your YouTube channel? How can people find you there?
How can people find me there?
Where should people find you? Where do you want people to find you?
It is the Chiptune Anamnesis, but that's kind of a, maybe you can just link to it in the video. That's mostly just the spot where I show off like, hey, I made this, you know, or this is what this sounds like, and kind of showing people what these things do. I don't get a lot of traffic there for, it's not like for self promotion. It's more of like for support and like just showing like kind of like, these
cool, well, have you looked, doing, at, but have I, you looked at my old videos? Because that's literally what it is. It's like, 30 seconds.
That's like, why I kind of felt like a camaraderie with you. I'm like, this dude's kind of like me, like in a lot of ways. And it was kind of fascinating again, like as I got to talk to you now, and also watching the podcast that you already done, and like being like I relate to like so much of like even like your life experiences with your family and stuff. I'm like, that's totally me. Like,
that's so cool.
You know, battles with depression and all kinds of stuff like that. Like, I've been through it too. So some of the stuff still going through it.
Yeah, man.
You know, so it was kind of a relief to know that you were just like a normal person that I could just talk to a normal person. And like you said, like chiptune does kind of seem a little gatekeepy in some areas. So I'm trying to like un-gatekeep it and get people like working together again on new things and collaborating, showing off their music and just being like, you know, there for them.
The thing I would say is like chiptune is a rabbit hole, right? And my goal was to make the hole as wide as possible, like to trap as many people, because it's so freaking cool. Like, it just, no, like, dude, when you know, and you're playing a retro video game and you know the dude that composed it, and you know how they composed it and what chip and what sounds it can make, and then you're listening and you know, and you have a friend that just released an album using that same chip, like, dude, it's so like, it's so cool. And so I very much vibe with that. So hey man, this has been an awesome conversation. We're definitely gonna have to make a part two, because I think the annals of chiptune history is an area that I'd love to talk more about. And so as you like, as we keep going through this and just keep reaching out, I really, really appreciate your friendship so far, and hopefully it's reciprocal. So thanks a ton, man.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sure there's tons of people who just didn't know what happened to cat school, and this would be, you know, interesting for them to finally kind of hear it from you, like, you know, how it was for you, what you were doing. So
well, stay tuned, and maybe if you're lucky, I'll tell you, how about that? But I would actually love to share that story. It's like literally my life story. So
awesome. Yeah, I'm sure there's more to it, so I can't wait.
Interrobang.